Blog Talk Radio.
What kind of a...
We'd like to welcome everybody today to Blog Talk Radio, here with your host and co-host Don Allen and Mr. Ronald Edwards, broadcasting live from our high-tech studio, compliments of Macintosh Computer. Mr. Edwards, how you doing today?
Fine, Mr. Allen. Nice to hear your voice once again, and let me just take this opportunity to congratulate you on your marriage, if you will, beautiful event a week ago Saturday, the reason we weren't with our listening audience. But again, my congratulations to you and your very lovely wife.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Greatly appreciated. I'm honored. It was a wonderful time. I'd like to remind everybody that On Point this week is sponsored by Virtual Global Media Group. Located in Toronto and at offices here in Minneapolis. And these are the people who actually go out and train folks on how to use the internet and the social media marketing. And you can look at their online newsroom at www.govirtualnewswire.com. Get in contact with them. Good firm there. Moving on, Mr. Edwards, let's look at the global news and the platform and see what's going on here. I was kind of shocked about Israel attacking another ship. But what's your thoughts on that?
Well, this is a very delicate situation, a very sensitive situation worldwide, but it's definitely a delicate situation for the Obama administration and for Turkey. Both the United States and Turkey have been strong allies of Israel, particularly Turkey, in an area in which there is extreme hostility relevant to Israel and particularly Israel's relationship and its conduct with respect to the Palestinian question. The ship that was attacked earlier in the week, in which there were 9 fatalities, was flying under the Turkish flag. That attack clearly took place in international waters, which is a clear violation of maritime law, if you will. Of course, the United States came out with pretty much of a soft powder puff kind of response. Turkey, altogether different. Turkey has indicated that there has been severe damage to the relationship between the two nations. In fact, Turkey, Ankara, which is the capital of Turkey, recalled their ambassador, which is a serious situation under the procedures of diplomacy. Turkey's prime minister indicated 2 days ago that the situation was extremely severe as it pertains to relationship. Now, sometime earlier today, the Israelis boarded another ship. This ship was flying an Irish flag, if you will. So
wow.
I guess the Israelis are spreading it out, if you will. Apparently, according to all of the news services, we've been on our shortwave listening to a number of broadcasts from around the world on our shortwave radio. We always encourage people that if they have the money, that's something that they may want to acquire as a shortwave radio, listen to some of these broadcasts from other places in the world. The Irish government has already indicated its concern with respect to this violation, apparently, and thankfully there were no casualties. So that situation is very fragile. Now, there's an additional piece just in the next minute, Don, that our listeners certainly may want to take a look at and analyze, and that is, since our last broadcast, the United Nations Nuclear Monitoring Agency has issued a report that they have determined that Iran has acquired enough enriched uranium to arm 2 nuclear weapons. And I think that we know, those of us who are internationalists and watch the international scene, that Israel is extremely fearful and terrified of a nuclear-armed Iran.
Yes.
Now, the Israelis do not have military capability to strike at nuclear facilities inside of Iran. They would need American assistance to do that. If that takes place, it's Katie bar the door. So We have a very sensitive situation. I don't know what the thinking of the Israeli government has been over the last 6 or 7 days with respect to their actions. Of course, they are terrified of Hamas being armed inside of Gaza, though they're treating those folks in a very repressive manner, a very inhumane manner. And I think the Israelis know that there are serious consequences for the way that they have been handling the situation in Gaza. I am a little surprised that our 5th Congressional District Congressman, Keith Ellison, who is the only seated Muslim in the United States Congress, has not been vocal, particularly in an election year, with respect to the incident on the high seas, the incident today, and the deplorable conditions that are confronting the residents of Gaza. I'm really surprised that Keith has not taken a firm position. Now, after the military conflict, if you could call it that, if you remember, the congressman went to Gaza City, took pictures of him standing on the rubble, and et cetera. He talked in terms of his concern. I know, as a constituent, I'd certainly like to hear something from him on this.
Yeah, that would be really great to hear from Congressman Ellison. He's been mute along with other local politicians here. I would just like to let people know that our call-in number today is 1-347-426-3904. We'll be opening up the lines about the middle of the show, but we're going to continue this. And one topic also I'd like to touch on, Mr. Edwards. People follow the media, and they take it as gospel, okay, that if it's on mainstream media, that it has to be absolutely the truth. This is what's going on. And in the last, 7 to 10 days, we saw an oil spill turned into an oil leak.
Okay.
And you know. If I spill some water here in our studios, you know, I can get a rag and wipe it up. But if it's a leak, we're going to have to call a plumber, you know. And so with that said, I've been watching a lot of news reports, and President Obama is saying that he's upset. He's actually pissed with what's going on there. And he pressed BP to fulfill its moral and legal obligations in the Gulf, and I don't understand why BP doesn't have a contingency plan or what's going on there. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I think this is one of the reasons, Don, that Attorney General Holder was sent into Louisiana in the last four days to take a look at the possibility now of criminal indictments against BP and others, if you will, including maybe some even in the federal government, because there's been a lot of criticism about a less than comfortable relationship between the petroleum industry and many of the federal regulatory agencies that are supposed to be monitoring all aspects of the petroleum business, including exploration and drilling and such things as that. BP, I think, has done insurmountable damage. In fact, if I were a shareholder in BP, I'd be taking a look at telling my investment bankers to maybe, you know, sell off some of my BP stock. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, right away.
Because I think there are going to be serious consequences. I mean, we're now, you know, almost 2 months into this catastrophe. It is an environmental disaster. It is a political disaster. It's a moral disaster. Some people want to equate it to Katrina. Katrina was a different situation because a lot of lives were lost, and far too many of those lives, as we all remember, were African Americans. Okay,
yes.
I can still see President Bush flying over New Orleans as black folk were clinging to the roofs and drowning in the water. But still, the problem this is causing for the environment. Now, in the last 40 minutes, on this end here in our studios, we are looking, of course, at our monitors. And right now, in fact, CNN and Fox and others are taking a look at oil that's coming ashore along the Florida Panhandle. In other words, that's up around Tallahassee, the state capital, and along there. Those beaches are already being inundated. And it's interesting that the names that they're able to coin. Madison Avenue is doing its job. They're now calling these pieces of oil that have actually come together oil patties, like you're talking about patties at McDonald's, you know, hamburger patties.
Yeah,
they're calling them oil patties. I discerned that earlier this morning, listening to a couple broadcasts, and I mean, I think that's that's fascinating. Of course, it's not funny, particularly to those that are extremely concerned. Now what you have are a whole host of people along the western coast of Florida, starting at the Panhandle, who are extremely concerned about contamination, environmental erosion. What it's doing to the ecology and et cetera is just outrageous. My sense is that BP has not begun to pay enough in compensation for this transgression. Now, to your specific question in closing, it is quite clear that contrary to the perception that people try to leave that these are the brightest folks in the Western world, it's just clear that they did not have a contingency plan. They should have. And they appear not to have the technology intellectually to be able to put something into place. They've been stumbling and fumbling around, and people are, you know, coining real jazzy kinds of terms and identification of different pieces of equipment and et cetera. The only word that's in play here is failure, okay?
Yes.
And I just don't think that the president can tolerate it much longer, and at some point I think the attorney general is going to have to advise the president on what the contingency plan is for possibly taking not only control of the entire operation, but maybe taking control of BP's operations in the Gulf.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I was just, in preparation for the show, there's a lot of blogs out there with information on, if you just Google on how to stop an oil leak underwater.
Okay.
And some of the things that are coming up are just incredible, because what I'm seeing out of about four or five different blogs I looked at out there with information from, I would consider legitimate sources, because some of them are scientists, PhDs, et cetera, they're saying that it would take something just a tad short of an explosion, almost equivalent to a nuclear blast underwater, which will make you can't fish there, you can't swim there for 25 years. But yet, if they don't do anything, you still won't be able to do anything down there for 25 years if the oil keeps leaking like that and goes to Florida coast and travels here, because the Gulf Stream is going to take the water everywhere. So it's,
right.
It's very, very important that they solve this, and instead of using like the oil paddy key phrase, or we're going to top kill, we're going to start dumping sand and debris in there. Okay, this is the earth leaking.
That's right.
It's nature. You don't have really much control, but they should stop it. And all the solutions that I've looked at would be devastating to the ecology down there and to the United States and the Gulf and those people that have made their living fishing down there. So
that's something
we're going to have to look at.
By the way, on that particular note, there are a number of African American communities in the so-called coastal region. I thought CBS did a nice piece night before last on some of those communities, and certainly some of our listeners from the Louisiana area are familiar with that. These communities, as well as other communities that have been more highly concentrated by the white media, are just devastated with respect to what is happening. The fishing industry, by and large, has been just absolutely closed down. In fact, the Department of Interior and the government itself, of course, the Department of Interior is a part of the government, but as the lead department, the Department of Interior, in concert with the Coast Guard, have now designated another, 55,000 square miles of the Gulf to be closed down and off limits. And folks, are very dependent as it pertains to their livelihood and et cetera. And you're absolutely right. We may have a situation where if you can afford it, you may have to pay an exorbitant price for oysters and shrimp, because obviously those specific, shrimp beds, oyster beds, things like that, are just being decimated by this oil. By the way, on the nuclear piece, I was interested to hear you indicate that. I looked at a piece last night. Saw a one of the most recognized and decorated nuclear scientists, and he was taken back that some folks had actually suggested a nuclear detonation at 5,000 feet to try to do something. Well, by the way, if they were to make that mistake and do that, it wouldn't be 25 years down; it would be 25,000 years of contamination in that part. If you detonate a nuclear device, it will be 25,000 years before you can go in there and do anything. You know what I'm saying? So,
yes.
Excellent point. Excellent point.
And I'd just like to remind our listeners out there that On Point, today's episode is brought to you by Virtual Global Media Group, Toronto and Minneapolis here. www.goldvirtualnewswire.com is their global newsroom. Check it out. Moving on, Mr. Edwards. I think that we're going to have to visit the local scene here. I see the switchboards are attempting to light up right now, but like you said, we'll open the lines up here at a half hour into the show, and that
about call five, in, about 5:31, 5:32. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And the call in number, so everyone knows, is 1-347-426-3904. But we're going to have to travel to Minneapolis, and so I just got a little traveling music real quick that I like to kick in here. And
okay,
let's go to Minneapolis here.
There's only one of him and he's it. He's the horse of a different color, you bad tell about. Ha, 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 and a couple of draw-la-laws. That's how we laugh a day away in the
video land of Oz. And we're going to welcome everyone to the city of Minneapolis.
Down the golden brick road, or the yellow brick road.
The yellow brick road is the merry old land of Oz. Because
yes. And you remember Julie Garland, by the way, was a native Minnesotan.
Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Yes. The beloved Julie Garland, yes. She played Dorothy in the Wizard of the Wizard of Oz. Yes.
One of my favorite.
Are you saying that we're living here in fantasy land here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis?
Well, I think that after the week, the since our last show, the last 2 weeks have been in Minneapolis have been incredible. I mean, from the mayor making a statement that the marijuana buyers that come into town are responsible for the gang violence to the Urban League's Gateway to Opportunity dinner and the rash of recent murders here in Minneapolis, that, you know, these people are not dealing in the correct space and time continuum. And so with that said, where do we start? Let's start with the recent murder of the young boy here in North Minneapolis, and then we'll work our way through in the chronological order of kind of, you know, what's been going on. And you go ahead and chime in, and I'll chime in also.
Since we were last on the air together, there have been four homicides, by the way, unsolved and none having any suspects. We had the double homicide on 33rd and Russell, in which the two men were tied up, tortured, and executed. We then had young Mr. Martin gunned down at Lake Calhoun, and then we had just a week ago yesterday, again, we are broadcasting on a Saturday, Mr. Hunter gunned down along 49th and Aldridge. No suspects. Now, it is basically the Martin and the Hunter homicides that I think raise some serious questions about motive and ethics and morality in this city. When Mr. Martin was gunned down, there was a newspaper article, page 1B of the Metro, which indicated gang violence, as if, you know, the black community is not aware of the violence. In our cities here, for our national and international audiences, gunfire, shootings, woundings, deaths, and et cetera, are a common occurrence, contrary to what the mayor and others tried to say way back in the campaign of 2009. And so when many of us saw the headline, we were like, okay, so what's different? What's new here? But what really took me back as a journalist, Don, was the uncovering of an effort by the police department and the Star Tribune to make it appear that Mr. Hunter, who was gunned down in a situation that was not gang-related, contrary to what the papers initially tried to say, and Mr. Martin were tied together, and that Mr. Hunter, 18-year-old African-American, was gunned down because he was involved in the assassination or the ambush of Mr. Martin about 4 days prior.
Yes.
This thing is so bad that the father of Mr. Hunter, a very dedicated, a very bright African-American, went out within 24 hours of the death of his son on last Friday obtain information, including the name of the shooter. Okay?
Okay.
On Memorial Day, in fact, I'll give you the specific time. We've been monitoring this. On Memorial Day at approximately 11:04 a.m., Mr. Hunter gave this information to homicide detectives for the Minneapolis Police Department. They basically dismissed his information. And, in fact, as of this hour, approximately 5:20 Central Standard Time, they have really not told him anything in any specific detail, though they have agreed upon his recommendation, Mr. Hunter's recommendation, that they will meet after the internment or funeral of his son, which will take place in a couple of days, and they will discuss with the homicide detectives what seems to be the homicide detectives' theory of the relationship between the two deceased, which there is no relationship, okay?
Exactly.
Mr. Martin's family, I think, is correct in saying that there was no evidence within their family that their loved one was involved with any kind of gang activity, and that the authorities chose to do this. Now, this is further compounded by a series of meetings that actually started on Saturday after a group of leaders, so-called leaders, pretended to have a vigil at the site of the death of Mr. Hunter, and then went into a series of closed-door meetings with representatives of the mayor's office. There was another meeting on Tuesday, and then this past Thursday there was a meeting early in the morning, let's say around 7:30, at City Hall with the mayor's representatives. The purpose of these meetings, Don, was to, quote-unquote, bring together the gangs.
Yes.
And get them to agree to a end or cessation of the, quote-unquote, gang violence. And, of course, when you do that, you've got to, and we've seen at least 9 or 10 of those in this community since 1965, so I'm not surprised. But when you do that, you've got to have some carrots, right?
Yes, you do.
Lo and behold, the carrot that was discussed this past Thursday in this closed meeting, very small group of individuals, members, I'm not going to name the specific gangs. It would be disrespectful at this particular point because they're really not buying into the BS that they heard. But what was laid on the table as an incentive, and what some of our ministers and leaders thought that they could get in on, because I'm told that one of our ministers last Sunday from the pulpit declared the fact that he had brought order out of chaos and that there would be an end to the violence and negotiations were going on. The mayor was not happy with that preemptive announcement, if you will. But what the carrot is here is the $3 billion West Broadway development plan. And what the individuals were told on Thursday, and this discussion has been going on now since Thursday, is that, here it is again, Don, there's going to be all kinds of economic opportunity, jobs, and et cetera, for the young men and women if they, quote-unquote, decide to lay down their arms. Now, and I know that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah, and we've heard that repeatedly in the city of Minneapolis from our elected officials. And then you have the, I don't call them leaders anymore. I call them just spokespersons or talking heads because, they fall for the same thing all the time, but yet, the carrots are there. So, someone's getting something somewhere and they're not delivering anything. Going a little bit further into this, I had an opportunity to attend Thursday morning's Hawthorne Huddle here in North Minneapolis, where
could you just, for our listening audience, could you give us just a little bit of background? What is Hawthorne? I mean, what is that group?
Okay, Hawthorne Huddle is sponsored by General Mills. They've been in North Minneapolis. General Mills Foundation, headed by Ellen Luger, comes over in North Minneapolis. They've been doing it for 14 years, and they'll get community spokespersons and agencies that they have funded to come in and actually, have a come to Jesus rally, basically, and say that everything is fine. I mean, I can't count the number of times that Ms. Luger has got up and stated that crime is down in Minneapolis, especially the day when the Somali brother was shot right there on Golden Valley Road 13 times and killed.
That's correct. That's right. That I was at that scene. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That morning, I went into the Hawthorne Huddle, and I was so disgusted that I got up and walked out. I said, the mayor was there that day, and he says, it's unfortunate today, but, you know, the police have shot him at someone. And this lady stands up and says, well, at least crime is down. And I'm just looking at her. I said, okay. But anyway, getting back to the Hawthorne Huddle, you have a bunch of nonprofit agencies, and there are spokespersons or representatives there, and some people running for office, of course, who always show up. And they have Chief Dolan, Inspector Martins from the 4th Precinct, where North Minneapolis, where all the homicides are happening. You have Mad Dads, B.J. Smith there, and you have the mayor. You have CPEDs, Mike Christensen, and Hennepin County Commissioner Stingline, who happened to actually stay the full time at this one.
He didn't do that the other night, but go ahead.
He didn't do that. Well, we'll get to that, too.
Okay.
And so it was really funny because I posed a question. I said, okay, let's call it like it is. These are black youth that are doing these crimes. Where are the black agencies? The Minneapolis Urban League. I says, where are they at? What is their position in what is their role? And where's the Northside Marketing Task Force? You know, there's 200 nonprofit agencies in the geographic area of North Minneapolis doing business. 150 of those in their bylaws and article incorporation say that they deal with youth violence, education, truancy, after-school tutoring, and their mission is to make sure that everything is beautiful for our black, our children of color, in this underserved empowerment zone as designated by HUD. So where are these people at? Well, the mayor kind of jumped back down my throat and says, well, the Urban League is doing a wonderful job because they have the gateway to opportunity, which I call the gateway to opportunity, and that they are
gateway to failure.
Gateway to exactly, another one. And so I didn't get the answer I wanted, nor did I get the response. But, you know, again, we have this perpetual madness of sheep and our black spokespersons fighting over pennies when there's millions there, and they don't have to rely on the city for a nickel, but yet we can't seem to come up with a plan. And when we do, the same people come to the table, they dole out whatever they have to dole out, to cut a penny six ways, here, and nothing ever reaches the streets. So
Absolutely. Now, this ties into the meeting on Thursday morning, a very clandestine kind of a gathering, if you will. I repeat the number again, $3 billion, the $3 billion so-called West Broadway development plan. And what the young African-American men, there were some there as old as 36, 37, from some of the quote-unquote gangs. But they were told that they would have an immediate opportunity. Also, there was a discussion about the fact that the county was going to hire thousands, well, certainly hundreds of young African-Americans. And, you know, school ends here in Minneapolis, for those that don't know, ends here on Tuesday, okay?
Yes, it is.
And
it does.
We've got a lot of young African-Americans and others of color. Our Native American brothers are doing actually a better job of putting something together, but they will be on the streets. They're looking for employment. They're looking for opportunity, contrary to what's always said, that they are lifeless and without motivation,
yes,
et cetera.
Yes.
That's just not true. But, you know, with the lack of enforcement, I mean, we, you know, maybe in the next couple programs we'll talk about the disaster that's the city civil rights department.
Yes.
But, you know, there's
yes.
no enforcement, but these – you know, these statements and numbers and figures are always thrown out that all these jobs and things will be made available. Don, my long experience tells me in this town that there will be no opportunities. We will have thousands of young African-Americans who will be coming out of the school doors. They will have no employment. They'll have nothing to do. They will basically stand around on the street corners and watch white folks work, okay, because
exactly.
When I say that, I'm talking in terms of the many public works projects that are going on, particularly the county and the state.
Yeah.
Department of Transportation, MnDOT, as we call it here in Minnesota, has been an absolute disaster. They refuse to even consider diversity and et cetera. And so I'm trying to get a feel for where is the plan to reduce the violence. and to increase the hope. I just don't know. Maybe some of our callers may have some ideas.
Yeah, and on that note, we're going to open up the lines. Our number is 1-347-426-3904. We have someone right here on the line. Hello, you're with On Point with Ron Edwards and Don Allen. You have a question. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Well, hello, how are you? Is this Don Allen and Ron Edwards, the Ron Edwards and Don Allen?
Oh, yes, it is. Ron, we have on the phone with us right now.
I already recognize the voice. Yes, yes. How you doing, Bob? All right, all right.
I am doing
wonderful. What's the question?
And kudos and honor. Well, I'm adding a question. I'm in, you know, the race to win it, and I'm running against, my name is Barb Davis White. I'm running against Keith Ellison for United States Congress, and I'm taking him on in the primary, as you may have heard this week. There's been chatter in the 5th Congressional District. The 5th Congressional District wants to live, and the you guys are bringing the points home. People want to work, they want to be viable, and they want to be considered as human beings. And we're on the road to being a little Detroit. If we don't get new leadership, I was asked by Democrats to run against Keith Ellison. My question to you guys is how are we going to, it's not some, you know, the congressional piece is federal, but in our city, in our Minneapolis is the city that I would be representing along with New Hope Crystal. There's a lot of communities involved with the 5th District. I want to know, how are we going to change the leadership in Minneapolis? We have a Met Council that has been appointed. They are anointed to do nothing but to bring nothing but trouble to our 5th District. How do you suggest that we move in and incorporate the political sphere with the hearts of the people and make sure that people get a fair shake in the 5th District?
All right. Thank you for the question.
Thanks for that question.
All right.
I think, do you want to start off, Mr. Edwards? Or?
Let me kick it. And because something has come to mind, and Mr. Allen and I have been talking about this, and Ms. White raises a very, very significant inquiry that we need to shed some light on. In the late fall, early winter of last year, 2009, the Northwest Area Foundation, if you remember, under the direct leadership of Mr. Gary Cunningham, had a big come-to-Jesus meeting at General Mills. In fact, I have to say this, I don't want to embarrass my co-host, but when our journalistic friend, native-born Minnesotan, et cetera, attempted to enter the facility at General Mills, the co-host on this program, Don Allen, was told that he could not come in. There were over 150 people who were attendees, that were selected, if you will, were invited to participate, et cetera. And, you know, I heard a lot of great things went on, and it kind of broke up before it was supposed to. It was supposed to have gone from basically 8 until 4. By 12:30, after they all had lunch, everybody was gone. In fact, I can well remember one of the mayor's assistants was seen at the McDonald's up on Broadway getting some hamburgers because he didn't like the food out there. But anyways, there was supposed to be a follow-up meeting under the auspices of the Headwaters Foundation. This project was handed off by the Northwest Area Foundation to Mr. Cunningham to the Headwaters Foundation, and there was supposed to be a second Come to Jesus meeting in April. It never happened. We made inquiry as respected journalists on why this was not, it did not happen. No one could find out. Now, we were being told at that time that these were the creative thinkers. You remember that, Don?
Yeah.
These creative thinkers were going to come in with a multiplicity of recommendations to confront the multiplicity of problems. Now, Barb White Davis raises a very interesting question because many of us were being told there was no need for our observations, particularly those of us that have maybe are historians and have been around and have fought these battles, because new dynamic thinking had taken place.
Yes.
It never happened. Right. I maintain that if there had been a follow-up in closing on my end, if we've had a follow-up, if that whole situation had the real meaning and integrity that was being sported, if you will, or publicized, maybe we would have reduced the number of homicides in our city by 10, 15, or 20 because there would have been a plan. Bob White is absolutely correct. There is no plan, and there is always a rejection for fresh new ideas that talk in terms of meeting the actual challenges.
Yeah, and speaking on that note from Bob's question, if I can interject here real quick, that day at General Mills was really peculiar because, Mr. Edwards, as you know, I corresponded and telephone line with Mr. Gary Cunningham, pleading with him the importance of letting me in this meeting. Let me see what they were doing, okay? Because they had the same folks that always come to the table, and last 30 years these folks been around, nothing has even gotten done. So when he says, you can't come in, it's pre-registered, you have to be on this list, I said, okay. But, you know, General Mills, I went out there that cold morning and walked into the lobby. Lo and behold, Mr. Cunningham met me at the door like he had ESP or something and knew that I was walking through the door. And he says, you can't come in, but we can talk. Now, in that 15-minute conversation that I had with him, six people that were not on the list came up to him and said, I came over with John Doe or Billy Doe, and can he come? Yeah, he can come in. So six, seven people walked in while I sat there, not on the list, just like these other people, and was not able to participate.
Yeah.
So getting back with what Ms. Davis White was saying, what Barb was saying there is that, and totally agreeing with you, there is no plan. There is no, in the city of Minneapolis, they had talked about building the largest YWCA in the United States, right across there from the Cub Foods. They talked about the light rail, Botno light rail plan. They talked about several different opportunities that are bringing in economic stimuli for someone other than the residents of North Minneapolis or people of color in general, because we have Asians, we have Hispanics, we have Russians, Somali. I mean, it's a melting pot of people in these neighborhoods that are just, you know, not getting anything. And if you presented them a community benefit agreement, and the simplest one to do would be the 40-40-40, which means 40% while planning, 40% while building, and 40% after it continued for a lifetime, which would employ maybe 3,000 to 5,000 people and give them some career type jobs. But the mayor's office doesn't want to hear that. CPED, who's able to bypass the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights and hire who they want to, when they want to, and how long as they want to.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you don't have any quotes or restrictions on what happens here. So it's a strange thing that goes on. But we have another caller. Let me go ahead and grab
this
caller.
Okay.
And see here. Yes, you're on live with Don Allen and Ron Edwards on point.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yeah, how are you
guys
doing?
What's your question, sir? Beg pardon?
Well, yeah. Is it true that Keith Ellison is getting divorced?
Yes, the Minneapolis Star and Tribune plagiarized a article. Actually, I don't want to, but it's better it's coming from me than Don. Yes, the Star and Tribune this morning, VJ, or whatever, CB or CJ, repeated a article that was the property of Mr. Allen and the Daily Planet. Yes, Mr. Ellison is, in fact, divorcing his wife of 20 years. Or is seeking a petition for divorce, yes.
Yeah, with all the stuff that's going on in North Minneapolis, where is the elected officials? Where is Mr. Champion where's Ellison? I mean, no one's talking about this violence, these kids.
Yeah, well, you brought up a good point, caller, because state representatives, as I'll call him, Bobby Joe Champion, has been out of sight and out of mind. There's been probably 12 meetings in the last month that, you know, he should have made an appearance at. And he has not been, for someone that sits on the Minnesota Department of Transportation kind of steering committee with the state, and that could actually write legislation to address CFR 46 and make sure that the jobs are happening. You know, he hasn't lifted a finger to do anything. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting to see what's going on.
Let me say to the caller, it's interesting, sir, that you crafted your statement like that, because interesting enough, State Senator Higgins, though, was at the meeting
yes.
that we kind of touched on earlier. She said exactly the same thing, but she was being very patronizing to the black citizens over there, and the blacks made up half of the crowd Thursday night. And I know I was very proud of the African-American community because they were there, quote-unquote, without the presence of leadership. Now, the white community was well represented. Commissioner Stanglein came in, opened the meeting up, and then got out of there. Senator Higgins stayed the entire time. Don Samuels came in the last 12 minutes of the meeting and attempted to circumvent a number of black speakers, and I'm talking about just grassroots black folk, just black folk who live in community. And one elderly sister stopped him in his tracks by saying he'd have to wait because he hadn't been there. But to your specific question, caller, in closing it out, the leadership has been absent and conspicuous. Representative Champion has been asked on a number of occasions to take a look at a couple of different situations. In December, in my newspaper column, I asked him to take a look at the fraudulent and falsified figures coming out of the Twins baseball stadium that was being monitored by the Civil Rights Department and also the University of Minnesota's TCF Stadium. He declined, and consequently, those figures are being pushed as authentic, and we are certainly contemplating now legal action. But we appreciate your question, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, and he, the caller, just wanted to answer that question, ask that question, and move on. Something else here, I'd like to make sure that's absolutely straight here. The information was sent to myself and another local paper here, the Minneapolis Mirror.
Oh, okay.
And the Minneapolis Mirror took the jump on it, and I took the feed as soon as they posted it. So the Star Tribune did not have the original story. And, of course, when myself and the Minneapolis Mirror posted the story about Keith Ellison's divorce, we were hit with a comet storm of inquiries that we weren't telling the truth. This couldn't be real. And, you know, the usual stuff we get from the community. And then if it's in the Star and Tribune now, all of a sudden with these people, it becomes legitimate, which doesn't make any sense to me.
It's the gospel.
The Johannesburg Time has it, so it's the gospel. So,
by the way, I understand that the petition was filed on, what was it, the 20th of April?
In April, yeah. Why would they wait? That's news. I mean, even the Gores released a public statement.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
And we have another caller chiming in.
Let's get the caller in.
Yes, you're on live with Don Allen and Ron Edwards on Point. You have a question.
Yeah, I got disconnected, but one more last question is, where's the training center in North Minneapolis? They have this OIC thing. Seems like a joke. A lot of the men are complaining at our office here that they can't get jobs.
Yeah.
And they get federal money to train these guys.
The OIC in North Minneapolis is Summit Academy OIC. I don't know how much, you know, I can get in depth on that because of an ongoing investigation that I'm working on for a report, and I really don't want to let the cat out of the bag at this point, but we have some discrepancies or disparities in the amount of a little bit over $10 million, and things are being looked at very closely. But those people are being positioned for the school board building that they're going to build on Broadway. And I've been
correct,
to several
absolutely correct.
Yeah, and I've been into several meetings where, you know, the 100 hard hats, okay? These guys pay, you know, right under $5,000 to go through this training, but there is no pipeline of opportunity for these people to go to a union and get jobs. And so when you see them in these public protests, they're wearing sparkling, clean hard hats, vests, and their tool belt. Their hammer hasn't seen a nail since it came out of Ace Hardware. And so, you know, you're looking at it, you're going like, what's going on? But this is, again, caller, this is a continuation of what happens in our community. You have Neon, which is up on Broadway Avenue. Last year, the University of Minnesota, UROC, spent some money and had 13 students. And they asked Neon to come up with a plan or entrepreneurial program for these students to kind of do this pilot program to see what was happening. Well, there's no intellectual giants in Neon or in these agencies in North Minneapolis. So what they did is they plagiarized a 4-H piece, which is agriculture, and they twisted it into one of the line items was that the kids would take pictures. You know, and me being a journalist and also working for a major ad firm, my first question to them was, you're going to have 13 kids come in here, and the first thing they're going to do is they're going to take pictures, okay? Nowhere in this documentation or quote-unquote plan is that we're going to have these kids to learn what this digital photography is about. We're going to have a blog or a website for these children to post their pictures. We're going to have a thing to sit down and talk so these kids can keep their pictures and learn how to build their own website or their own blog so it can be a continuation. And furthermore, there was no pipeline for any of these children. These children walked out of there with their cameras taken away and a certificate. No.
Wow.
People. You know,
okay.
So, I mean.
Let me see. Don, do we still have our caller on there? Because,
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, okay, buddy. Let us just update you on the district headquarters as we first reported here in our inaugural program. A $27.5 million administrative facility is allegedly to be built at what is 1251 West Broadway, which is like directly across from the Kentucky Fried Chicken on West Broadway. First of all, negotiations are still going on with respect to the price because the district has a real problem, and I'm not sure that the Minneapolis Public School District is solvent at this particular point. And if the state does not return that $48 million that they took under color of law from the district to help augment the state's deficit, if you will, Governor Pawlenty has indicated that $48 million may not be returned in a timely manner. Mortensen has picked up on the fact that the school district may not be able to meet its fiduciary responsibility in the construction and the appropriate timely payments as that building. First of all, there has to be the demolition of the old Broadway school and then the beginning of construction. What the citizens are not being told by the Johannesburg Times / Minneapolis Star Tribune is that they're still negotiating the price. Now, when the Minneapolis Board of Education passed the resolution that night back, 27th of April or whatever, the impression left with the general populace and with the taxpayers of this city and Special School District Number 1 was that everything was etched in stone. And our viewers, or in this case, our listeners, need to be made aware that they're still now trying to negotiate the price, okay? And citizens, particularly in North Minneapolis who have been promised all these jobs, need to be asking the question, how is all this going to be accomplished? Now, early on in this broadcast, Mr. Allen made mention of something called the Community Benefits Agreement, CBA.
Yes.
That has been proposed. We understand the word that's coming out of 807, that's the headquarters of the school district here in Minneapolis, is that there will never be a community benefits agreement and that we, the community, will have to depend upon the good faith of the school district and others. Okay? We will have to depend upon the good faith that they will allow X number of people of color, and particularly African Americans, to seek both employment and contract on the new school district building. Now, that's just the school district, so you get a better understanding of what happened on the Twin Stadium and on the TCF Stadium on the campus of the University of Minnesota.
Exactly.
Yeah, one last thing. I live in North Minneapolis, and it's just strange. With all the killing that's been going on, no one talked about it, but yet when it happened in Lake Calhoun, all of a sudden the mayor and the chief want to have a press conference about a comprehensive plan on crime.
Well, sir, you know, again, and I think, sir, you know the answer. You know, I think that you move around in some circles, if you will, the Billy Joe Bob. You know, it's not a put down, but I think you move in the circles. I think you know that there's a sense that there's a different value on the lives of black Americans than there are on the concerns, number one, and the lives of white Americans. Notice I said concerns, okay? Because in this city, the concerns of the white community gets a greater priority than the deaths of black people, okay? So to your question, sir, which is extremely valid, is that the reason you didn't hear anything when the two men were the home invasion where they were tied up, tortured, and shot through the head, and then Mr. Martin and Mr. Hunter, is because there is no accepted importance of value on the lives of black people. And so as long as you have that mentality in what basically has turned out to be a predominantly white government here, I mean, we have a 13, we haven't said this to our national and international listening audience, Don. We have a 13-member city council and a white mayor, and we have a city council that has 13 members, and one is, quote-unquote, a person of color. We did have a champion there for a while, but he moved on to a new position in federal government, a man by the name of Ralph Remington. We have no one to speak for us. And so to your inquiry caller, we have no one to champion us. And so when the mayor and them decided to respond to the concerns of the white citizens in the Calhoun area, they weren't concerned about Mr. Martin laying dead on that parkway. They were concerned that stray bullets had hit their apartment building and went through their windows and et cetera. You can't find a single statement in the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the occasion of reporting on the death of Mr. Martin, a citizen, a white citizen, making any expression of concern about the death of Mr. Martin. It was all about, quote-unquote, the gunfire and these people out here and et cetera. And I think, sir, ladies and gentlemen, I think it gives you a stronger indication of the mindset that is too permanent, if you will, throughout America. But in this town, it's quite clear that there's less importance on what happens to the safety of the black community.
Yeah, I agree 100% there. Also, Mr. Edwards, we were just a minute ago talking to Barb Davis White. During the show, I just pulled this off govirtualnewswire.com. Our good friend, former Minnesota Viking, Joey Browner, is running for mayor in the city of Eagan.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah.
So that should be pretty interesting there. And he's looking for everyone's support out there. It's pretty interesting because I guess he had ran before a couple of years, and I'm just briefly perusing the report here. But he's in it again, and we got to wish Joey all the luck that he needs to be successful out there.
And Joey's definitely a good man. He was a legend, first at the University of Notre Dame, along with a couple of his brothers who played there also, and then certainly for the Vikings. And he has stayed in his community. That's what's important.
Yes.
He has stayed in his community, and he has tried to provide an uplifting, if you will, to that community. In other words, he has returned that which he was given. It's too bad that others haven't seen fit to do that. Anything else, Don, as we begin to reach the last, four and a quarter minutes?
Yeah, we have about a little bit under 7 minutes remaining here.
Okay.
And again, I'd say today's show is brought to you or sponsored by Virtual Global Media Group out of Toronto, Minneapolis. When they have www.govirtualnewswire.com, which is their online press room. You should take a visit there. A lot of good news there going on. But moving right along here, I just like to get into the gateway of opportunity in the Minneapolis Urban League. And I just like a couple points, like to make a couple points. Last year they had Michael Eric Dyson to come in and then leave with
tremendous
about
speaker. Yes.
Tremendous
yes.
speaker, and I'm not mad at him, but he comes in and he makes his over $10,000 salary and he leaves and money leaves the community. And
yes.
And this year they had Congressman Ellison to
now he wasn't the keynoter. He was receiving a
an
award called the Pathfinders or the Trailblazer or something like that.
Trailblazer, Pathfinder, something they had going on.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because I've made numerous attempts to reach out to R. Scott Gray at the Minneapolis Urban League to obtain information. Of course, I'm one of their harshest critics here in town, but I was just wondering with what the mayor had told me on Thursday at the Hawthorne Huddle that the Urban League is going to be doing great because they're doing the gateway to opportunity, which led me to ask, will you give the $700,000 you took for them for their truancy program in 2008? Are you going to give that back? Are they doing that well? Of course.
Yeah, which would have saved the jobs of at least 14 African Americans, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly. Because, when you walk into our Minneapolis, so for listeners that are listening around the country, our Minneapolis Urban League is located in North Minneapolis. And it, at one time, it had over 200 employees. It was a place to go to people that wanted something, that wanted to do something for themselves. There were people there that could tie you up, get you a job, had to have just the connections were incredible of what the Minneapolis Urban League could do. And actually, Mr. Edwards, you were the chairman of the board during that the heyday of the Minneapolis Urban League. We'll let our listeners know that also.
Yes,
and
yes, we were. We were the chairman of the board, in other words, non-paid staff. We were chairman of the board for 17 years.
Mm. Yeah, and so the longest-seated chair on the board of the Minneapolis Urban League, but now you go over there, and there's probably less than 20 actual employees in the building. It's quiet.
Oh, no, there's much less than that, I think.
Okay.
You'll find it's probably down to like 8 or 9.
Yeah, and it's
oh, by the way, let me just say this quickly,
okay.
Don, so that folks can get a flavor of this organization. By the way,
okay.
The St. Paul Urban League has gone out of business for those
They're
of
done.
Us of our
yes.
national listening audience. The most significant tenant right now in the Urban League office is Congressman Keith Ellison.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And you're wondering what he's doing because it was very interesting. I went to another community meeting at St. Anne's subsidized housing where they were talking about shots fired. And if you go back and look at your 2008 earmarks, you'll see that Congressman Ellison did a couple things for the black community in North Minneapolis. He made sure that the light rail had a bus stop in front of the Twin Stadium to the tune of $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And he also made sure that the city of Minneapolis had those little transponders affixed to telephone poles to make sure that they could record shots fired. Okay.
Right.
And one thing I asked at one point, when does that, I mean, he's in the Urban League building. That's where his office is. And I mean, if I had, that's like having a rich uncle living in your house. Okay. And you need gas money. You know, you,
right.
What, you go down and you say, hey uncle, you know, can I have like 10 bucks for gas or whatever? And oh, sure. I'm here. But I don't understand the relationship between that office and the Minneapolis Urban League and this guy and him, Amy Klobuchar, Senator Klobuchar, and a couple other folks have this control over this earmark money, and he can make sure that the Urban League received a substantial amount of funding just as long as they said they were to do what they're going to do. But then again, I understand that things make him afraid. That might be a reason because just last year, the Minnesota Department of Health sent over a request to the Minneapolis Urban League to ask them, who have you been serving in your HIV AIDS research? And can we, before we fund you this year, can you make sure that, you know, we have everything in line? And this particular form that had to be filled out was brought to a young lady that I personally know in the Urban League who absolutely refused to lie on the numbers and was later terminated from her employment at the Minneapolis Urban League.
Right.
And so you have things going like that. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And if you look over the, you know, I've never seen the Secret Service, the FBI, or the IRS run up into one of these nonprofits because they've had millions of dollars over the last 5-10 years and nothing has been done. You know, it just doesn't make any sense that they keep funneling money and dollars into these programs, and we're not seeing no measurable, successful, measurable results at all whatsoever.
But
now,
it looks like we're probably last. So let me just say, for our listening audience, to support and affirm what you just said, I would suggest they take a look at the letter sent by the United Way to the Urban League in October of last year when they indicated to them that they were being defunded to the tune of about $500,000. And that's one of the reasons that the Urban League never got the money from Trivant, who used to be the Lutheran Brotherhood. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Whoops, you know.
Yeah.
$500,000 that couldn't be accounted for, and as an outgrowth of that, the United Way defunded them.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And so we have a little bit over a minute left, I should say. Is there any last words in parting here, Mr. Edwards?
No, but our listening audience can look forward to some very in-depth discussions in the coming weeks, particularly as we take a more in-depth look at the problem of crime and drug operations in Minneapolis, particularly drug operations in which the police may be winking and looking the other way.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, this is our last minute, but we want to take this call real quick.
Okay.
Yes, can I help you? You're on live.
Hello. Say, I just want to let you know I'm a white female out in the suburbs. Okay.
Yeah, less than 30 seconds, ma'am. Go ahead.
I don't hear what's going on out, you know, in North Minneapolis. I don't hear about it, and it's not that I just want to make sure you guys know. It's not that we don't care. It's we don't hear about it. We don't hear about it on the news. We don't hear about it in the paper. I want to know where your leaders are that make this a more known so that something can be done, because whatever hurts our cities hurts all of us.
Well said. I'm just saying we don't have leaders. We have spokespersons, and I appreciate you calling. We'll be actually on the air next week at 5 p.m., and you tune in. We'd like for you to call next week. Thanks for calling, and you've been listening to On Point with Ron Edwards and Don Allen.
Thank you. Okay.
What kind of a horse is that? I've never seen a horse like that before.
Let me call you back on your cell, Don.
Okay. There's only one of them, he's also a different color you've heard tell about. Ha, 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 ho, 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 and a couple of tra-la-las. That's how we laugh a day away in the merry old land of Oz. Boo, 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 chirp, 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 and a couple of la-dee-da.